Next week marks the centenary of the conscription referendum.
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
In fact, on two occasions, October 1916, then December 1917, Australians were asked to vote on the question of military conscription for service in World War I. And on both occasions, we rejected conscription, albeit narrowly.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say, I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
Now, these were bitterly divisive times. So what did the referendum represent? A victory of democracy over militarisation? Or was it a case of political disloyalty? Sean Scalmer is an associate professor in history at the University of Melbourne, and he's a co-editor of The Conscription Conflict and the Great War. Now, that's published by Monash University Publishing this month. Sean, welcome to Between the Lines.
Great to be here.
Now, context is important. 1914, we go to war in Europe. 1915, patriotism is rampant. 1916, high casualties on the Western Front. That meant a vast decrease in soldiers. We're struggling to fill enlistments. What happens next?
Well, what happens next is that the Prime Minister, Hughes, goes to Britain. And while he's in Britain, Britain institutes conscription. New Zealand follows by instituting conscription. And Hughes, anxious to support the war effort, comes to the view that conscription should be implemented in Australia as well.
So the referendum question, this is on October 28, 1916, is should we have conscription, yes or no?
Well, the question is actually a little bit more complicated than that.
Oh,
and
right.
The critics of Hughes suggest that the wording is quite misleading. The wording of the plebiscite questions in both 1916 and 1917 is the object of a lot of dispute. Because, as I said, that the opponents of conscription suggest that, in a sense, Hughes has stacked the deck by posing a question which makes it much more likely for there to be a yes vote.
And the Labor Party splits over this. Why?
Well, the Labor Party splits because many members of the Labor movement are strongly opposed to conscription. The other aspect of the context we need to remember, alongside the war and the incredible loss of life on the battlefront, is that there is a long-standing tradition of a liberal opposition to conscription in all of the English-speaking British countries. So when the war breaks out, in fact, one of the things that many Britons feel they're fighting for is for a notion of a free society, a liberal society, which they contrast with what they see as a continental despotism. And one of the bases of that distinction is that Germany and other European powers are seen to be associated with conscription. Conscription is seen to be a symptom of overreaching state power. And after all, the idea that the state can compel someone to go and fight, to go and kill another person, and of course to risk their life, is, you know, the ultimate form of state power. So there are many British liberals who are opposed to conscription. Mm-hmm. It's part of what defines the liberal tradition over the 19th and early 20th centuries. And that becomes part of not just the liberal parties in Australia, but also the Labor Party. And that notion that this is a battle for freedom, and that if you're fighting a war nominally for freedom, then you must preserve freedom at home, is very, very powerful. And of course, that's given an extra twist for members of the Labor movement, because they don't just fear that people will be compelled to fight overseas. They also fear that if there is a power to conscript, that that will be used against the unions, that the labor force at home will be reorganized so that conscripts will be put into war reserved or war occupations, that when the unionists try and strike, they'll be replaced by conscript workers, mm-hmm. and that union militants might be threatened in some way. So these are all particular fears that are within the labour movement that are part of a broader tradition of opposition to conscription, which they see as a defence of freedom.
Okay, so the trade unions were strongly opposed to a yes vote. Why did the Catholics, led by Archbishop Daniel Mannix, oppose the conscription so strongly?
Well, one answer is that many Roman Catholics worked in working class occupations and were trade unionists, and so they had very good reasons for thinking like many other trade unionists. Another, of course, important context is the Easter Rising in Dublin.
And the Easter 1916, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. So the way in which a nationalist republican uprising in Ireland is put down, and put down with great military force. So that leads many Roman Catholics, Irish Roman Catholics, especially in Australia, to think, well, why should we support so strongly a war when our aspirations for home rule, self-rule, are being stymied by military force?
My guest is Sean Scalmer from the University of Melbourne. He's co-editor of The Conscription Conflict and the Great War, out next week. Sean, if patriotism, and Professor Neville Maney, one of Australia's leading historians, has argued that British race patriotism was rampant during this period in Australian history, if so, how do you account for the failure then of the conscription referenda?
Well, one answer goes back to what I've already talked about, the notion that the way in which Britain and British race patriotism was partly constructed was the notion that Britain and the English-speaking peoples had a particular attachment to liberalism and to freedom. Mm. And so the anti-conscriptionists regarded themselves as the true defenders of that tradition. Mm. They thought that what had happened is that the supporters of conscription had abandoned British traditions and had moved over to continental despotism. So they saw themselves as the defenders of the true way. The other sort of complicating factor, of course, is the question of white Australia, which is obviously tied up with the notion of a race patriotism. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And both opponents of conscription and supporters of conscription tried to use white Australia to win support for their side. So the anti-conscriptionists said, well, if you have a conscript army, you're going to have more white Australians leaving Australia. Australia will be vulnerable to invasion, okay, to threat from overseas. Similarly, the pro-conscriptionists said, well, if we don't show that we're loyal to Britain in their hour of need, then we may not get the reinforcement and the support we need in the future if we're threatened from outside.
So these referendum in 16 and 17, they weren't really votes against the British Empire.
Well, it was very complicated. I mean, like any referendum, to try and say that it's about one thing or another. I mean, a whole range of arguments were being deployed. And certainly some people who voted against conscription nonetheless saw themselves as defenders of empire and loyal members of the empire. At the same time, there were some who were opponents of empire. And I suppose one of the important points to make is that in the process of the campaign, Hughes in particular, as Prime Minister and as a supporter of conscription, tried to argue that if you were a true servant of empire, you wouldn't vote against conscription. Mm-hmm. So he tried to use loyalty to empire as part of his argument.
But then again, there was no Australia First argument offered, nor was there an Australian cultural nationalist position adopted, right?
Well, you know, certainly some people did speak about Australia on both sides in very positive terms. Mm. I mean, one of the ways in which Australia came into play in these debates is around the notion of Australia as a precocious democracy. So you've got to remember, again, an important part of this context is that Australia is one of the few countries in the world which has given the franchise to working class men and to women at this point. So it's highly unusual for so many members of the community to be able to vote. And it's highly unusual, of course, that they're able to vote on a major issue like this, whether or not people should be compelled to go and fight overseas. So both sides are interested and concerned with the notion of Australia as different because it is a democracy. The supporters of conscription say, in a sense, democracy is on trial. Is a democracy going to make the hard and necessary decisions to defend itself and to defend its allies? The opponents of conscription say, well, in fact, this is the moment where it's a true democratic test. Are we going to remain a genuine democracy and extend that democracy, or are we going to sacrifice our democratic liberties for the cause of winning the war?
Finally, the book you've co-edited, it's being promoted as a corrective to the prevailing narrative. Question, what accounts for what you call the militarisation of Australian history in recent decades, and will projects like your own, to what extent will that dispel the prevailing narrative?
Well, I think the argument that there's been a militarisation of Australian history has been around for a while. And the sort of the main line of that argument is that the federal government in particular has put an enormous amount of resources into remembering the experiences of war. There's been hundreds of millions of dollars spent on memorialisation of the Great War. There's been materials sent into classrooms. And of course, our politicians have always been anxious to draw attention to the import of Anzac. Mm. And through that process, of course, Anzac has been remembered and the sacrifice has been remembered, which of course is tremendously important. But some other stories have been pushed to the side. So one of the interesting things that drove us to write this book collectively was the fact that if you think about what identifies Australia, what might make Australia different, what many people would suggest is Anzac and the values of egalitarianism and cooperation and so on. But if you actually look at Australia in comparative terms, other combatants in World War I also emphasised the egalitarianism of the trenches. In fact, the Germans and the Austrians emphasised that as well. What made Australia different at this time was the fact that we were a democracy and that we tested the issue of conscription for overseas service through plebiscites twice, and quite remarkably, in a moment of incredible fever pitch, fears of disloyalty and the loss of life, people voted that we shouldn't compel people to go and fight overseas. So we wanted to recapture the import of this event that has been lost. Whether or not we're able to, you know, provide a complete corrective to the militarisation of Australian history, I wouldn't claim that one book would do that, and I wouldn't claim that, you know, we're the only ones who are challenging the apparent militarisation. But I think Australian history is enormously important, it's enormously varied, and we hope that as people contemplate the important anniversaries around World War I, they do remember this important anniversary as a kind of a democratic anniversary.
Sean, thanks so much for being on RN today.
My pleasure.
Sean Scalmer is a co-editor of The Conscription Conflict and the Great War, which Federal Labor leader Bill Shorten will launch in Melbourne on Thursday.